The title of tonight's talk is The Lucent Fish. When titles are presented suddenly out of the blue or out of the green, one should seize upon them. It is relate L-U-C-E to that marvellous fish called the pike. And if you have enough energy and time to look it up in a good dictionary, you'll find a very mysterious source of enlightenment. To do with parasitic action of non-parasites on parasites, like the populace on the king. To begin with, we have to say this: there is no thought in the human being that is not symbolic. All thought is symbolic. Thought is made of ideas. Idea is Greek for form. Form is shape. And any shape, when seen, must be interpreted. And if you have to interpret something, it must be symbolic. Sim means seed, B-O-L, bol means will. Symbol, seed of will. That means if you find the meaning of the seed idea, you will be able to will in a new way. Symbol is a way to a new mode of willing. So a word is a symbol. A syllable is a symbol, a letter is a symbol. Every idea we mention by word is a symbol of something else. It's a symbol of a power. Symbol. Seed of power. The will is a power of initiative. So we're going to discuss the meaning of this title. Now you know there's a law of sound shifts. Those of you who've read your Grimm's fairy tales know that the fellows who invented those were very fond of etymology and verbal significances. The hidden meaning of fairy tales is power games played by those who know and those who don't know. And by the law of sound shifts, it is permissible to change one letter for another letter. So if I were to say, take the F in fish and write a V there instead, that would be quite legitimate. The god called Vish, with the nu on the end there, is a preserving god. But you observe that the V-I-S-H can be turned round, I-H-S-V, which becomes a Latin tag that converted Constantine to Christianity as he understood it. And it meant, in this sign, victory. And if you use the same letters again, it is the same Hindu god, Ishwar, which is a creative power. And if we use the same letters again, Shiva, destructive power. The god Shiva destroys illusion. He destroys only illusion because what is not illusion cannot be destroyed. The final reality is indestructible. So that when it says, here is a creative god, here is a preserving god, here is a destroying god, the same symbols are being used to signify these fundamental ideas. And we'll put the fundamental ideas. I equals one dot. That means principle of individuation. The least mark you can make is a formal reference. Now H is hierarchy. I'm going to put HR there to save time writing a long word. H is hierarchy. The Hebrew letter there is Chet. and het means hidden hierarchy. The eighth letter of the alphabet means reciprocity, like this. Here's an eight. In the Egyptian, you can write affection, like this. And that's 8/4. And it's part of a sign, like this. A three-part man. And you put the bar across there, which is an arm. You then have eight above and one below. The one below is our four. You know how we write four, like this. Four means squared. Four means establishment. So there is an earthly establishment below the bar, and there is a reciprocity above the bar of thought and feeling, and the balancing of these makes hierarchy. Power differentiation. HR means a power differentiated. All hierarchies, all systems, all organizations are built of power. And the power has grades. Less power down there, more power up here. Initiative up there, inertia down there. The next letter we'll put there, V equals drive. I'll put drive there. It is originally, you know, that's the sixth letter of the Hebrew alphabet and the sixth letter of the English alphabet, which in English is an F. And you observe you do an F like that. Now that F is a square letter drawing of the phallus, like that. In the Egyptian it's rather more obvious because it goes like this. That you would recognize, wouldn't you? Simply male drive. The initiator of the act. The driving of the act. This point is the idea that focuses the field of forces together, and as soon as you focus energy, you've made a hierarchy. Because as you posit the point, there is a gradation from the point outwards. The power becomes less effective the further you move away from the initial idea. Yes, now we want an S. Now S equals spirit. That's the word that's translated as signal, the sign, the indicator, and it means quite simply a serpent, in which there are two forms in the Greek, a closed form looking like an O with a bit over there, and the terminal form like a serpent. I should move on a little bit, I think. I'll move this way. We now have an initial idea. Once posited, cuts total reality into differentiations of power, planes of being, levels of understanding. And an H, which as Shakespeare called it, is a ladder to all high designs. And we put the R on there. The R is the vibration, the shaking of the ladder when you try to climb it. When you insert energy into a closed system, it shakes. That shaking is the letter R. That's the ruh of the Arabic, or the ruh of the Hebrew. It means shaking, vibrating, discriminating power. And this is your driving developmental power, and this is your serpentine cunning. And if we write the famous word S-O-S, save ourselves, we go back to its origin. Serpentry, undulating power. That S is quite simply a drawing of an undulating power. In the Egyptian you have a little serpent going along like that, and it's got horns. It's an asp. It is the one that caused the death of Cleopatra. It meant the horns of the dilemma. She liked being a queen, but she liked being admired by Antony, by Caesar. This desire to be admired undid her. It's the horn of the dilemma. To wish to be desirable makes one passive. To wish to be desirable in order to rule is a self-contradiction. Kierkegaard says only a woman can hold this contradiction without exploding. The reason that she can't explode is because she has not yet imploded. Remember, we are talking about the power of symbols. Our alphabet is simply original hieroglyphics simplified and brought down from the high priestcraft of Egypt, Babylonia, India, China, where all the priestly rulers were in contact with all the major countries' governments and inserted into those governments useful evolutionary suggestions. The external politicians didn't know much about it. They still don't. But there is an establishment of intelligent beings who know these symbols and know what they mean. And they keep the real essence of the symbol to themselves. Remember the pike and the loose. When you get home, look it up. If you can't afford a dictionary, borrow one. The SOS is that the spirit can close and the spirit can be free. That's called keys of binding and loosing, or loosing and binding. Now we'll go back to this fish. This fish is the Hebrew word for man, and the letter, I put it in the Hebrew form there. That's the vowel. If you'd like to be an F, all right, I'll decorate it for you. Fish means drive man. Man of drive. The one with the principle internally, consciously available to refer to. Only drive, convergence, can give you that which you need for your further development. So therefore, the sign of Christianity is a fish. Remember, that's the four disguised like this. And is under the bar, that's the firmament. Above it is the reciprocity of thinking and feeling. And below it is incarnation, embodiment. Now, everybody has ideas that are good, as well as ideas that are bad. And they often say, why can I not use my good ideas? Why do my good ideas remain ideas and don't go into action? The answer is a simple neurological one. If you have ideas in the forebrain and you do not emote in the midbrain about them and then put them in the hindbrain, they will never become action. One can think forever the truth and never embody it. To embody it, you must move the physical body in accordance with the idea. And to get the idea to move, you must emote. Without an emotional charge, you cannot move. That's a very, very individual problem, John. It takes a lot more energy than some people have, because they don't know that convergence is the key. And we're going to do, we did a bit of it actually this morning, we'll do it in a rather more simplified form now. To be or not to be? That is the question. Coming from infinity, a force comes in, travelling, it's going nowhere. To make a where, it must make a double drive to use and the hierarchy. It must turn round like that and stimulate itself there. observe that. Until it hits itself, it is not conscious. It's a most peculiar state. Imagine a condition of consciousness. I feel this pen, I feel the resistance, and I know I've got the pen because of the resistance. But supposing the pen were very, very super cunning and refused to resist me. And when I pressed, it receded down to a minute point. I couldn't feel it. And then it went smaller. It became a mere location with no body. Then I could not feel it at all, and I would not know that there was a point there because I'd get no feedback. If I don't get feedback, I'm not conscious. Come with, together. SCI means cut, as in scissors. Take the field of awareness and chop it up. OUS, you see our being. With cutting being. The way you cut it is simply doing that. That force cuts this force at that point. And at that point, there is an instant of awareness. We become aware only if we get opposition. That's why I like Peter on the front row. I know at some point he'll say something. Stop me falling asleep. Won't you? I saw your eyes preparing. That's why I like those lights a bit dimmer. So I can see you.
Is that the word, that's the word conscientious?
Conscientious, yes. That means you're really analysing all the time. Yeah? Now, this circle is the original form of the letter B. Quite simply, it means to encapsulate. Now, our letter B is written like that, isn't it? And was really a relatively late form because it was a house with two rooms. If we go back to an earlier form, we find it like this. Now, if you had to draw 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lines, wouldn't it be quicker to do that? So you tell him, he says, write that for that. And that means you've got two rooms. One's called heaven, one's called earth. Here you keep the cattle, there you keep you. You know, in very primitive houses, you have a place for the cattle. Very, very early houses, sometimes the cattle and the pigs and the chickens, which is not only in Ireland, are with you in the living room. That's why it's called a living room. There's so many things there. I don't really have you ever slept in a very primitive cottage with a thatched roof? Then you know what living room means. They drop on you as soon as they feel your body heat. They come out of the walls. Oh, and if you've got an eiderdown 200 years old, which a friend of mine has, well, apart from taking out the feathers one by one, you won't get it right, will you? Somebody gave me, how many years ago? 3 years, not very long ago, is it? A duvet. I regretfully had to take it back to the vendor. It was singing chicken all night. And it swore on the label that it had been sterilized. I think they were referring to the manufacturer. I think I'll move on. We mustn't divert ourselves. This is the travelling power, and until it hits itself there, it is not conscious. So the state of absolute bliss, without a B, without B-less, bliss is unknown even to itself. Can you imagine a state of awareness in which there is a motion but you don't know about it because you have no resistance? Have you noticed when you're in a train sometime, You think the train has started to move, and it isn't. It's the other train outside. If your movement is uniform, no matter how fast you go, a uniform and non-accelerated, non-decelerated motion is utterly unconscious. So somehow, to become conscious, you must create impedances. That's why we're all here, to impede, and thereby waken up the potential consciousness of the field. And this part is me, and outside here is not. And we have to be very careful about this. N means motion. The Egyptian thought is simply a wave like this. And we've cut off a bit of it and written it like an N. Motion. And we want an O to make the word not. Well, this is the O. And then we want to fix it so it cannot escape. So we have to put a T inside there. There's our master symbol back again. The cross in the circle. Now, Hamlet's problem is to be or not to be. Being means encapsulation. It means being bound. But not being bound means not being, means you're not there. Now, you have a word in Hindu philosophy which is translated bliss, Ananda. If that had not got the D in it, to present it with a stop, it would represent a motion, eternal, uniform, no variables, and therefore unknown, unconscious. By putting that D in there, the word Anna, which means running serpent, is given a little stop. And you may have noticed sometimes snakes, when they are playing, turn over and rub the coils against the coils. Have you noticed snakes putting their coils and then threading themselves through them? That in heraldry, and the snake goes like that. Yeah. That's called a node snake. N-O-E-D. A node snake. Knotted. If it doesn't knot itself and tread through itself, it isn't sure that it is a being. Now, Hamlet's problem is this. If I am not being, I shouldn't use the O and the T. I'm just Now, that letter N means the absolute negation. You have the Hebrew word here, meaning absolute negation. But it's an absolute affirmation of a negation. And it means an I. Ein means an I. An observer has never been seen. No one has ever seen an observer. But the observer can precipitate a self-opposition and see that. The eye, says Shakespeare, sees not itself but by reflection. It must bend back on itself and rub itself, and then it becomes aware that it is a self. Which bit? If you tried to see your own self looking at you, you would go to a mirror. If you went to the mirror, what would you see in the mirror? A reflection. Would it be your eye you were seeing? No. Only a reflection. In the same way, unless we cross over at that point there, unless we cross over, we do not become conscious. We must cross ourselves to become conscious. This is the whole meaning of the crucifixion theory, which you find in the wheel of Christianity, of Buddhism, Brahmanism. Any system has a wheel, and the wheel means turn around and cross yourself. You can turn around, cross yourself, and go out. That's the drawing of a hot cross bun. And the hotter the bun, the better for you, right? You like cold hot cross bun? No. And you put a bit of spice in them, don't you? You know what the spice is for? To waken you up, dip you up. Without the spice, it's a bit bland, isn't it? So, beyond being, there is nothing but an emotion which is indetectable. It's there, but it's unknown, unknown. It's not locked up. It's infinite, eternal, unknown. So this word Ayin in the Kabbalah signifies the absolutely unknown, unknown. Now, it's quite useless to itself. There is no use in an unapplied force, is there? How can there be a use in an unapplication? Use means application. But hidden inside that absolute, there is a yes and a no. Now, the no is a negation, and the negation of the free motion is being. To be is to be encapsulated. To be is to be captured. The power that posits captures itself, puts itself in bondage. And without that bondage, there would be no individuated self-consciousness. No power, no enjoyment, no heavens, no hells. There would be a no thing. Recreational no thing. The Hindu expression for that is para-brahman, beyond even the universe. Take the universe as one eternal, inclusive. Anything you may conceive is all within Brahman. But beyond that Brahman, the infinitely extended, there is a no thing beyond. And that no thing is the state before the originating creative act that made the universe. Now, Hamlet is made of H, hierarchy, M, inertia, and L. L is the link factor between H and M. If you want to marry somebody and you are in the free state, para-brahman, there's no bride, no groom, an infinitely extended possibility that doesn't realize itself. If you want to relate, you have to have a bride and groom. There's a bride, that's a bride, a house in which you can enter, discriminate, and divide, and there must be somebody to brush it down. That's called the groom. How many of you ride horses? What's the function of a groom? What? Look after the horse. You know that's the function of a husband, to look after the wife. For the same reason. And a man that doesn't brush his wife down regularly with a curry comb is missing out. I'm not joking. It's quite serious. To be means to be encapsulated. I'm going to do now another symbol where we put the triangle to symbolize the Trinity, the triad of think, feel, will. I will put think there, feel there, and will there. I'll change the will into act. Think it, feel it, act it. And that's a primordial triad. One that Pythagoras is very fond of. You think, you feel, you act. If you act, you will feel your action and you will think. Why is this feeling correlated with this action? That Trinity is indivisible, it's there all the time. And you see that thinking itself has got to be cool, clear, calm, formal, and it must not be emotional. But without the emotion it can't move, it's just an eternal standing form, like a truth without interest. And therefore you must feel it, you must emote, you must like it or dislike it. And from your like or dislike of what you think will emerge your act. Now, we have a trinity there, and that symbol on its own, that one, has always signified fire. We'll write a Hebrew form of it, shah, there. The noise that fire makes. Have you heard fire gushing along? And if you invert it, because that fire means energy, this one means matter. But we call it water, that's mayim, waters. Because water is the type of material plastic substance. So we have shah mayim. We put shah mayim together. That's the shield of David. Shah mayim, that's fire, water, heaven, earth, together in perfect balance, is called heaven, shamayim. When your energy is perfectly balanced with your embodiment of that energy, so there's nothing over and nothing under, what you need, that's heaven. That's called a heavenly act. When your total energy expenditure exactly matches the material application. Another word for it is efficiency. With efficiency. Now the question is raised, all science today knows perfectly well that matter is a form of energy. And the energy that is materialized is compacted and is built of spinning forces, electrons, protons, mesons, whatever kind of on. On means serpent with tail and mouth, going round and round. When the energy goes round, then the form of it that's going round is called by us matter. Still only energy, but it's called matter. Now we want to know, how does it happen that the power becomes matter? The answer is simple, by rotation. But the critical point, that line touches the return line there. Another way of symbolizing that is to draw it like this, the red one there. Put the tail in the mouth of the serpent, that's the same diagram. The serpent biting his own tail is a self-stimulating energy system. Now, between the energy and the material expression, there is a point there. You know, in a black hole, there is supposed to be a point. What's the name of the point in the black hole? Singularity, right? A point of singularity. The word for it in Hindu philosophy is laya, point, or laya center. That means the moment of equilibrium between a force, intelligence, there, and an application there. Simple demonstration, you bend your finger. You have an intent to bend your finger. Before it bends, but when it's just about to, what do you experience? I have an intent to bend my finger, and mysteriously it bends. What is between my intent and the band. Does anybody know? A feeling? It isn't energy. Because energy means, energy means actually affirming the work that's in the band. It's an intent. But it's a very, very weird thing, because that intent is so slight that it does not give you any measurable energy. You can't measure it. An oscilloscope will not show it for you. But it will show you the first stages after it. Now that's magical intent. There is immeasurable energy available, which the intent realizes. Yeah. That's the basis of all miracle. Remember that point. It's a point of transition between thinking I will bend it and the bend. It's not the bend, it's not the mere thinking, but between. There is a point of initiation. We now go back to our friend Hamlet. He says, whether it is nobler in mind to suffer the slings and the arrows of outrageous fortune, or to take arms against the sea of trouble and by opposing at them. I will now draw the troubles. They're all in here like this. These are the troubles. This area of being is the area of troubles. These troubles are Tura bubbles. The whole of this is full of troubles. The area of being is nothing but trouble. Man is born to trouble as the sparks fly upwards. But because that energy is moving, it cannot go to dead center, so it must keep turning. And the more it turns, the hotter it gets. The more vigorous it contracts, the more trouble it creates. So any attempt to order reality by force of compression creates more trouble. Thus, the more refined the instruments of science become, the more they'll discover that the instruments have created the problem. That means there is no final solution for empirical science, because the tool itself creates the problem. And you take arms against the sea of troubles and by opposing in them. Now Hamlet thinks that's a bit much. So he thinks, what's the alternative? To die. Get out of the realm of being into non-being. But in that sleep of death, what happens outside there? Here you know what happens. Here you have trouble. Here you can deal with it. Here you can hit people. Here you can keep the dog instead of the wife, because it exists. Outside there, you have infinite power with no controls. So how do you feel about launching yourself by suicide, like Stoics permit? Launch yourself into what? Into no knowable, in which there may be an infinity of nightmares. In that sleep of death, what dreams may come must give us forth. Now Hamlet is fiddling about between a hierarchy of powers, which is initiative originated, and inertia. And he has a link factor. I'll tie that together with the Hebrew letter Lamed, which is an L, the link factor. Looks like a funny aerial. Held out by a fish in its mouth. I'm not sure I'll draw the rest of the fish. Now that fish represents emotionality involved in material existence. And the hierarchy is the concept you have, which you lift out of the water and hold it up with the lamed. The lamed means an ox goad. It means a link factor, a tie, any relating force, whatever. Now, either you're going to be outside here with no controls, whatever, that makes a lot of suicides, not quite successful. They're not sure about whether the non-living state is going to be comfortable. It can be very uncomfortable. It could be full of nightmares from which you can't wake up if you have no body. This realm of being is your body. Now Hamlet is a fool because he is unconsciously incestuous. He wants his mother for his wife, and another fellow is instrumental in the death of his father so that he doesn't have to kill his father. His father is God the Father. His father is the infinite power called Father, because that means put here. The power that put us here is called God the Father, that here. And another, because that Father is the generative power, another who is brother to that, be differentiated, we are other. A brother is a differentiated power in the same house. And he's going to try to get hold of this sphere. Now remember, the sphere represents substantiality. Free energy, substance. I've written a rapid M in there to fill it up. The letter M in its terminal form in the Hebrew is quite simply a square. And it means to establish, to have inertia. And it's called mem. The origin of the word for mother, mum. Now the infinite power has generated it, and it's the true husband of it. But the identified awareness of the sphere is the brother to the infinite. And marries and effectively kills, that is KL, keeps out, gets rid of the infinite and takes over. And between the original power and the mother principle, a son has been born called Hamlet. That is H, M, tied together. On the H side, he's his father. On the M side, he's his mother. In the L, he wishes to conjoin with the mother. This is everybody's problem. Everybody that comes into this world has got a mother, and he thinks his mother is better for him than his father. Unless the mother is an extraordinary pathological thing, he'll actually appreciate his mother's attentions when he's very little more than he would appreciate the attention of his father. So there's a natural inbuilt Oedipus complex inside every male. He wants to marry his mother. He doesn't know about stage, that his mother means his own substance. He thinks it's the woman that attends to him on the outside. Now Hamlet's confusion is that he doesn't know that he's incestuous. He doesn't know that his real father is eternal spirit power intelligence. And he thinks that this uncle of his has usurped his position, which he has. But it's Hamlet's not very good logic that gets him into trouble and makes him mad, divides him. If he had known that all is spiritual manifestation, he would not have bothered to marry the external mother, but he would balance his own being. And he wouldn't mind if an uncle seduced his external mother, because he would know that that was not the infinite power. But if he had that much intelligence, his mother would not have married his uncle. She'd have preferred the son. And when we talk symbolically in this manner, you have to let your mind open. The worst thing that you can do with the mind is let it close on one significance of a symbol. It must be that the symbol has an infinite application. So just when you see the meaning, don't seize it and say this is the only meaning. No, say the meaning has infinities of applications. I will extend that triangle the top triangle is pure fire. And that remains, remember, fire is the symbol of energy expanding, vanishing in the infinite. And somehow we've got to catch that fire and trap it so that it doesn't vanish. So there is the fire in the infinite. Here is the trapped fire. We want to represent this one, well, the top one, inverted. And that gives us immediately an awareness that we exist. By the resistance, self-generated. And the first awareness is feeling. Just a simple feeling of being, like you're having babies. And women more than an intellectualized men. And then you have to push this triangle down again to make it incarnate. Somehow you've got to get that feeling operative. And then you must make that stand on the earth. Now there's the tree of the Kabbalah. Just for connection simplicity, we add those lines at the side. And that contains all that we need to know that is knowable. And above it, there is an absolute yes, no. It's saying no to the limitation, yes to the freedom, simultaneously. It's saying yes to no. You cannot know, cannot know, unless it ties itself up. And when this triangle is pointing upwards, going upwards, this one is pointing downwards. And between the two there, we have that mysterious point of singularity. And this, you remember, is a drawing of a man's head, chest, pelvic area, and the earth on which he stands. There is your larynx. There's one arm, so you're going that way. Here's another arm going down that way. And here's some nice legs. And here is your coordinating central column, right there. That's called the divine man. That's called the cosmic man, Adam Kadmon. And it says power is up there, where the upturned fire triangle point three. And it says slavery is down below, but can be made consciously subservient to the purposes of intelligence. Now here we have a point of initiation, and that's called a cat hair. You know the recent cat hair, that shining cat. Cat means fixity. We write it there, we could write K-A-T, wouldn't matter, because there's no vowel there anyway. It's a matter of convenience. Cat hair. It's usually called kip hair. Cat hair. The hierarchy that arises when you posit a fixated point. You can't put a point in a field without creating gradients of power. So on the top of your head there, where the thousand petal lotus of yogis is situated, you have a fixation, a cat. Cat means fixated, as in catatonia, the fixed posturing of schizophrenics. The top there is the beginning. It is only a point. It is only a location. It has no spatial dimensions, but it has a location. It has no spatial dimension because that point is infinite. And there's no edge to it. It goes out to infinity. And it is absolute wisdom's first positing. The Ayin above there, that's that one, which is the absolute yes, no, infinite, posits the first point there. That point is translated in English as crown, so I'll put a crown on it. Like that. That's a crown. Doesn't look like a crown. It'll do. The location. No spatial dimension. Has a location. But it's yes, no. The location is where you are. At any moment, your consciousness flits about, doesn't it? Doesn't your consciousness flit about as the ideas come? Where is it? It's got no spatial dimension. It is in the field of infinity where your point of interest is. Where the treasure is, there is the heart also. At any given moment, you think, you see power. You're following a train of ideas. And when you think, power, you go like that. You locate yourself. But do you do it spatially? Or just in the intention within the field of consciousness? Yes. There are critical points on old-fashioned crystals where you could get good reception and others where you couldn't. But that crystal could work because it's really a vibratory field power condensed into crystalline form. When you get salt, pour it into water and let it dissolve, the water looks like water, doesn't it? But isn't there salt in it? And if you treat it appropriately, don't you get a crystal back? So isn't there actually crystalline form hidden invisibly in the water?
And operating.
If you put your tongue in it, it will bite you. And it's very, very mysterious. Somewhere between the crystal and the invisibility is a point of decision. Now this point here of Kether is a point of singularity. That is to say, every individual being, humans, animals, vegetables, minerals, angels, whatever, every point of individuation is Kether. It's a cat hierarchy. It's a fixation of a hierarchy. And it's there because you intend it to be there. If you think in the atmosphere there and focus on it, something will appear. I mean that quite seriously. Some people get hallucinated because they have an unconscious intention and they stare like that. And then it projects. Poltergeists are excessive applications of that power. You precipitate your intent and it organizes space and posits into it carbon particles and builds a body of intention. That's how this body is built. No other way. Now that's a point. And when you get that point, it's an initiating idea. And this drawing is a back view of God, because God said to Moses, I'll put you in the cleft so I don't frighten you. I'll put my hand over you so you don't see me, and then I will rest by and show you my posterior. That's what the book says. So therefore that is a back view of God. The American lady that published a book just recently on men's bums was unconsciously admiring the back view of God. She didn't know it, but that's what she was looking for. Signs of power in the buttocks. You know the buttocks are the zone of power. That's where your drive comes in your thighs. Isn't it? And thigh, biblically, is a euphemism for power. He put his hand under his thigh and swore an oath. Maybe he put his hand under the thigh too roughly. That's why he swore the oath. Now, the point posited, if the point moves, generates a line. A point moving generates a line. And the end of the line is two points. Now, at that level, we say, here is the initial idea, and here is the letter Z for Zoe, or life, And zodiac means light way, a way of light. When you get an idea, you ask yourself, could this idea serve as a basis of a way of life? Now, if it's a life way, you know, if you're not careful, it will vanish, and you will say, I had a marvelous idea, can't quite remember what it was. Have you noticed that about yourself? A brilliant idea, and you're going along in the car. As soon as I get there, I'll tell Agnes. When you get there, you're going to say, Agnes, I have something to tell you. I've got a brilliant idea. It'll come in a moment. We'll have a drink of tea. And it doesn't get mentioned. But you're aware that you had a brilliant idea. So the third phase is drawing board. Make a note of it. Every time you get a good idea, like wise guys, yes, you appropriate it, don't you? And write it down, because if you don't, you're going to miss it. I guarantee if you've got any old diaries with good ideas in them, when you read them, you didn't know that you knew that smart thing 20 years ago. You're sure it was valuable, you could use it, but it's gone. And only careful consideration of the handwriting is yours convinces you that you wrote it. Even then you're not sure, because your handwriting changes. So you go back to page one and you see that at 16 you wrote this very valuable diary of good ideas. And at 66 you've forgotten them all. So notebook or drawing board. Now the point has location, no dimension. The travelling point has no dimension, and when you push the line at right angles to itself, it draws a plane, which is your drawing board, the one on which you make your notes. That's called a plane of existence. But those three are not concrete. The line, the point, the plane do not exist in space. To exist in space, you must have length, breadth, depth. There must be three space dimensions. So on the fourth point, I'm going to draw a cube. There. That cube, or Ashla, law of the spirit. And the fourth point there, this idea, push hard at right angles to itself to create resistance, becomes, by pushing the plane at right angles to itself through space, becomes a volume. 1, 2, 3, 4. The fourth point, is that a number 4? What do you do for it? It's the sign of Jupiter. And Jupiter means Dio Pater, God the Father. It's called the first three-dimensional divinity for worshippers. Anybody who needs stabilizing consciousness by a concrete form is worshipping Jupiter. So that when Jesus says, I and my Father are one, he means the generator of his three-dimensionality and he are one. Because the energy that has made his being is one with his being, is it not? You all agree that the amount of energy involved in becoming you is identical with you. But the energy that generates you is called God your Father, or if you like, your Father Good, your generative goodness. Now, the moment you get a three-dimensional object, it is called an object, an orb throne. It's three-dimensional, it is there. You can worship it, or you can chop it up. Vandals used to like Norsemen. Huns. Vandals. Goths. Every time they saw a beautifully carved Roman statue, they chopped it. They threw things at it. They did not like enslavement to objective three-dimensional material forms. They called it idolatry. Thou shalt not have any graven images. If you worship the visible God's effigy and not the power that created it, you're idolatrous. You're worshipping that which is idle, that which does not work. The power works, but the image, the carving in wood or stone, itself does not work. But the power that it symbolizes does work. If you worship the power, that's okay. If you worship a block of wood carved in the name of the power, or a block of stone, you are called idolatrous, because the stone will not save you. Whereas the power would. So we have a situation in which a three-dimensional object comes into being. It is now coming in here, and the sign of four is there. And that makes our cross in the circle. We have established existential being of our individuality in ourselves. And the amount of energy used to generate each one of us is the father of that being. So when we say our father, we mean the power that generated all of us. When we say my father, like Jesus says, I and my father are one, he means his particular power that generated him particularly is one with him. So Peter the Lamech has a power that generated his body, and the power of the lady next to him is another power. So she has another father to Peter, and Peter has another power to the girl behind. Individually, we have individual powers that generate individual beings, and the amount of power doing the generation is identical with the being. And you can say, I and my father, my generator, are one. But there is an our father that covers all of us. And we can pray to our father or my father. Like Jesus on one occasion says, for the sake of the people that stand around that don't know the rules, I will say a prayer. But I know that thou hearest me always. The power is there. You are the power. You're listening to you. The essential center of your being is self-generative power. Actually, you can do anything whatever that you set yourself to do, providing you don't get diverted by a stimulus. How do you get diverted? When another power hits you there and obscures your being like this, obscures your essential structure, which is unique, and overlays it with the things that they say or do to you. And then your father has vanished. You've been inundated by a suggestion, an emotion, an idea from outside your being, and you've lost yourself if you identify with that state. You're then called, for the time being, lost soul. Let's write the word lost. L-O-S-T. Now you'll observe, lost is soul. And that's the name of the sun, isn't it? And T, as you know, it says in your Hebrew lexicon, T means a cross. The last letter of the alphabet, Tau, means a cross. It means you have fixated yourself and forgotten that you are the fixator. I am the slayer, the slaying, and the slain. I kill myself. I lock, K-L-L-K. I lock myself in my own definition of myself. There is no other bondage. How do we feel if we say, really, I'm a solar being, solo. I'm a generative energy that produced itself within the infinite field, which is Parabrahman, beyond. Within this field appears a sphere. Within that appears another, smaller, smaller, smaller. Within all these fields of force appear smaller fields, and each one is solo. Even the minutest cell in your body has a mind, a feeling, an opinion. If you dare to stick a pin in your body viciously, and the place where you stick it will react. It won't ask your permission, will it? Every minutest cell in your body is a little being, a little man. And therefore, it is evaluating itself within the bigger sphere that you are. And we are all little beings inside a big being. That big being is called God. But that God is infinite power. To reduce that God to a three-dimensional carving in stone or wood, and then forget that you're talking about power, and bow down to the stone as stone, the wood as wood, is to miss the whole meaning of the process. Now, unless we have the initiating idea, and in this case the idea of fixation of hierarchy, the cat hair. Now that cat hair, that point there, is a point of light. It's a loose. An L-U-C-E point. It's lucent. It is a shining point. The reason for that is the infinite from which it derives is an infinite ocean of equable light. But that field can precipitate points within it, and that point precipitated there, ket her, is a light. It is your monad, your self, your individuality. It doesn't. It becomes darker. Remember the Luciferian fall, a point, that's the cat hair, says, I'm so bright, I could be brighter. So it draws in more light, doesn't it? And then the light, which is power, and the light is photons, little packets of energy, at a certain point it blocks up from excess of light, darkness. Then you are intellectual. The moment you are real light, the intuition has gone out, you are then a very clever intellectual. And you feel very bright. And compared with dull-witted people lower down the scale, who've been depressed further and further into matter and inertia, you think you're bright because you got some formal knowledge. But that intellectual light is darkness. One of the Upanishads said there is light, which is darkness. There is a darkness which is darkness, called ignorance, and there is a light that is darkness, called intellectuality. Because does not the intellect function by means of ideas? And is not each idea a compression point? And is not a compression point an interference point? And is not interference the means whereby shining light through light, wave first into trough, darkness. And the cleverer you are intellectually, the darker you are intuitionally. To the boffins in their back rooms, with their intellects and their view of science. In the last 400 years, we've seen scientists on the edge of the ultimate truth, haven't we? What have they found? Everything they examine dissolves, and they have another problem. The grandfather of Huxley said, give me the number and positions of particles in the universe, and I will write the history of the universe backwards and forwards. Only give me. Did anybody give them? It was discovered there were no such particles. They were weird little things. What were those weird little things called? Wavicles. Things that behave like waves and like particles. They are both and neither. Science is still chasing them. What are they? Actually, they are zones of intentionality. Let's say that the big error of empirical physical science is this. It has tried, since the mechanistic Renaissance, to find an explanation of the universe in terms of non-sentient mechanical forces. The only error there was to think that mechanical forces could explain the origination of consciousness by the extra complication of the mechanical forces. Now, if a force is dead, inert, and not intelligent, then millions of them put together will not be intelligent. You can't, by simply adding up stupid, say, aha, intelligence. So the failure of physical science, modern style, is simply this. it doesn't like the idea that the universe is a living organism, that there are no dead forces. It's all the forces in the universe and in our body and in our brain. They're not mechanical forces at all. They are free, self-mobilizing spiritual forces. When you move your hand, who moves it? Mechanics? On what you call your desire. And what is your desire but an intention? And what is your intention? It's not a gross body, and it has no spatial location. But it can locate itself anywhere. So when we look at that diagram, that point of cat hair, fixation of hierarchy means you have an idea in your mind, and that idea will establish a hierarchy of powers. If the idea is erroneous, your hierarchy will be false. So like the gross, misunderstood aspects of Marxism, which make mistakes in Soviet Russia and send people off to Siberia. If you make a mistake, you get demoted. Your hierarchy is wrong. So you must have a true idea, and the true idea is this. Every point, the center of every individuality, is absolutely self-generated. And the clash of all these points of self-generation constitute in their relationships the universe in which we live. We are off power, that little point is a spark of infinite light. We are off power, we are self-mobile, but through inertia and miseducation we think, I'm just think, T-H-N-K, a crossing of a hierarchy in a closure. We think, and in the process tie ourselves up. We think we are free, but the thinking creates the bondage. So somehow we have to arrive at an unthink, the Zen, no mind. There's no set hierarchy until you set it. And you can't set it until you say this. The hierarchy is the function of the idea that I accept. So you have to know your fundamental idea. Self-generated.
One was got me and my father are one.
You say to yourself, I and my generative power are one. Isn't that self-evident? Is it? The amount of energy that you are, is it not one with you who are? Okay, I and my father are one. When you say something like that, mean it and understand it so that you can mean it. I and my generative power are one. My generative power and this being, they are one. No, because at the time when it was not so, what was so, wasn't it? The generator of that being then. Like when you were 5 years old, your generative power, your degree of awareness, and you, the product of that generative power and degree of awareness, were you, age five. It's always you, generating you. And if anybody talks you out of that, they stop you being you, and you are called a lost soul. And as the bank manager said a fortnight ago, without donkeys, who's going to do the work? Now the word don and key. Don means to judge, and the key is that which, when inserted, releases the tumblers and lets the door open. And don is the reverse of nod, isn't it? Where, having murdered his brother, Cain wandered east of Eden to the land of Nod. That means depression. It means no judgment. It means I give up. In the land of Nod, you fall asleep into inertia, and you don't know who you are, and you don't know that you are a self-generating being. How do we feel about it if we accept that? When we come into existence, we've exposed ourselves, an attack can be made on our being, may obscure us, unless we are very quick, very alert to counter the stimulus with an opposite stimulus. If you are very quick, very alert, you can contradict the negating stimulus. Say no to no and you got yes. When Jesus says on the cross, "Father, why hast thou forsaken me?" he's quoting from part of the Old Testament this statement, which means this infinite power beyond all these diagrams is the Father of fathers. And in order to become an individual, self-determined absolutely, you must not rely on the infinite, must you? So the infinite Father must desert you in order for you to find your own initiative. And then he says, come to Martimus, I've added it all up, it is finished. I've done my sum, my homework, I can now afford to die because I know I can resurrect. If I know I'm a self-generating being, and somebody comes along and tries to depress me, I'm supported by 1,000 other people, they talk me down, my cat hair inside says there, when they finish talking depressive talk to me, they can go away. I'll nod my head and say, yeah, you have depressed me, thank you very much, very helpful, leave me in my misery like Job, go home. When they've gone out the door, you go, and you reposit yourself. That's resurrection. You don't accept these depressive nonsenses. You might be tempted, yes, darling, yes, you do know better than I do. Yea, verily, you have created conscience. I am now very ill, I've got a terrible headache, will you please leave? When they go out, you put the hi-fi on, you have a cup of coffee. And you think an improving thought, like I and my father are one. You are then called resurrected. Would you like to think about that? Thank you.